Everybody, welcome to Take 240. We are here. We have a nice, tight, packed take today. I'm going to go through some favorite trailers and some movie news. I have some big news about a location type of thing. And then favorite thing we watched. We're going to announce some sweet film meetup, location, times, and we're going to get right into the Flash review, Asteroid City, and that's really about it. Maybe we'll do some couple audibles like we normally do, but without further ado, we have with us the 48-hour film winner of Sheet Talk, my guy, other co-host here of Sweet Film Talk, the legend himself, Kimiko Adcock.
We are what a day. What an absolutely wild Tuesday it was this last week. Get to the 48-hour film project showing, and it was like the winner showing. So like any film that won something got invited to this, which was basically an excuse for the guy to run it to just bring back as many people as he could so that they could all buy tickets to the screening so that the screening could, make a little bit more cash. So it was, while there were still some good ones there, there were some that, I want to say were dubious, but there were some that weren't as strong as others, but it was still fun. So we watched all of those and then we got the awards. So we started off with audience choice, won audience choice for our group, which was great.
Huge.
And that was the very beginning. So we were like, okay, most of these films had gotten like one award or another. And as it kept going through, there was two others that we felt were pretty good. And we were like, okay, if we don't get it, it's going to be one of these. And then both of those others also got awards. One got audience choice, went to my buddy Adam Broud. And then the other one, I don't remember what the other one got, but the other one I was like, okay, that one might win because it was pretty good. And then the guy gets to announcing the best picture and he goes on this weird, like, deviating rant where he's like, and the winner of this goes to Filmapalooza, you know what I mean? Doing stuff like that. It's like, just freaking tell us who won. And then when he actually did tell us who won, it was so anticlimactic that we barely even realized that we won. It was so weird.
Was that when you guys were recording? The video looked like you, like, yeah, from what I saw from the video of him announcing, I was like, wait, what's going on here? But at least you won. At least you got the bat.
Yeah, we did, which means we get to go to Filmapalooza, which is an international shorts competition in Lisbon, Portugal, this upcoming year in 2024 in March.
That's so cool.
Which is great because it leads into our spring break. So I'll be able to like spend like, me and Becky are planning on spending like 10 days in Europe in March. Assuming I can get, you know how it is with getting those days off right before a holiday. It's a little, they have to do like a raffle thing. So I'm going to see if they'll let me do it for educational purposes and just grant me the days.
Yeah. Well, what's nice is like, that's, you already know that you're going, so you can really like open that can of worms at the very first week of the school.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm going to text my CTE coordinator and just let her know like, hey, we won, we're going to this film festival. I think you guys need to let me go in order to build the reputation of the program and say our film teacher is an award-winning filmmaker, blah, 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 you know. And then the top eight winners from Filmapalooza go to Cannes just 2 months later.
How many total films are there like that are competing?
Someone said that there was like 100 or something like that.
Dang.
So, yeah. Yeah. Quite a few.
Is your short going to be shorter than others? Like, because I know that it'll be all like within 8 to 10 minutes long or something.
They're all like 4 to 7 minutes long. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which will be sweet. You know, we're just hoping for that top eight finish. And oh my gosh, going to Cannes would be so like in a very insane world. This short that we're filming this summer that we start filming in a few weeks could qualify and be good enough to go to Cam. And then this other film, short film that we just entered, if it does well enough at Filmapalooza, will also go to Cannes. So I could, in the most perfect timeline, have two movies premiering at Cannes next spring.
Dude, that is so cool.
Crazy world. Very crazy world. Cool. But hey, it's on the table. Who knows? We're still waiting to find out about our First Flight's short film fund thing. We should find out about that this week if we get 10 grand for our short. So we're like super hoping we can do that, because then we can do a bunch of stuff for it. But anyways, that's me. How are you doing?
Okay. Oh, one last question.
Yeah.
Can you edit Sheet Talk anymore or no more? You can't touch that at all.
We can like edit the credit. I think we can do like little things with the credits. We told them, it's like we misspelled some things wrong in the credits. But other than that, no, we can't go in and change it. We've got to keep it out.
Because it's like, it's that 48-hour film thing. It's like, yep. Once it's done, it's done.
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good. I just pumped out some movies. We did a little movie on the deck last night with my family. So we got like a projector screen, got a projector that my brother brought from New Jersey. His family's visiting. And we did that. So
he brought it with him from New Jersey?
Yeah. Yeah. He just packed it in his luggage. It's just like, it's honestly like the size of an Xbox type of thing. It's a little bit smaller.
Oh, okay.
So,
that's not too bad.
But we provided the projector screen and yeah, been a pretty good week. I have big news.
Okay.
The movie news is, back in the day, whenever there was a big release, we would go to Wingstop.
Yeah.
We would travel all the way up to West Jordan, hit the Wingstop there, and then hit the district normally to go watch a big release. That was
sure would.
That was the tradition. Then Wingstop got one in Provo. Then eventually got one in Lehigh. And now there's a Wingstop at the Geneva Megaplex. Dreams come true, folks. They come true. And when they come true, it really feels good.
Sure does.
So I'm excited. That's just going to be just the rotation, big release. There at Wingstop an hour before. Going to fuel up, relax, let it digest, be in my seat, ready to go. You'll see me there at Oppenheimer.
It is one of the things that I do miss about the big releases is we don't do Wingstop. I mean, we did it just barely for what did we do it for? We did it for Guardians, maybe? No, it wasn't Guardians. We did Wingstop before we went and saw something.
Air.
That's right. And it was like a doubleheader.
Yeah.
We had just seen something and we're like, okay, we'll go get food. Like me and Becky had just seen something. Anyways, so yeah, huge to have a Wingstop at the Geneva Megaplex location. Very big for us.
Feeling good. Feeling excited. That Geneva location is just looking better and better. I'm still shocked. That theater was built. That theater was there in like 2015 with nothing around it.
I know.
Nothing.
It was like half of the parking was just dirt.
Yeah.
It was just a dirt parking lot. You could kind of park. It was the wild, wild west for parking.
I don't even think there was any restaurants nearby it. So it's looking really good. So
and then the next restaurants we got there were like Little Caesars and Chubby's. Like they didn't even get like that Japanese barbecue place until like just a couple years ago.
Yeah. So it was kind of a desolate place, but you know. Movies rock.
It kind of is.
And it's great. It's the best place there. Should we talk about our Sweet Film meetup? Might as well. Let's just jump in there.
Yeah, speaking of Megaplex and Wingstop.
Okay, everybody, Sweet Film meetup of this summer. We will be at the Geneva Megaplex, our favorite theater. And Friday, July 21st at 7:20 p.m., we are going to see Barbie. So, again, Friday, July 21st at Geneva Megaplex at 7:20 p.m., we are seeing Barbie. The next day, get you guys some sleep, reset. On Saturday, July 22nd at 2:30 p.m., matinee, IMAX, we are seeing Oppenheimer. Seats are already filling up. Keeks and I are probably going to be buying our tickets today.
Yep.
So
we will let you know on the Instagram story when we've bought them, where we're sitting. come through to either one of these. You get two opportunities. It's kind of like a pseudo doubleheader. We'll enjoy Barbie that Friday night, which is a perfect Friday night film, if I do say.
Oh, great. I agree.
Great Friday night film. We'll be able to hear all the explosions from Oppenheimer the day before. And then we're going to hit that nice matinee, get you a little bit cheaper of a ticket. Oppenheimer, Saturday, July 22nd at 2:30 p.m. Come through. You know, maybe we'll hit Wingstop right before. We'll let y'all know. Get a nice little lunch at Wingstop, or we'll do it after. Big days. Big, big days for us.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. And then, like, that Saturday, sorry, I got something in my throat here. That Saturday is perfect because that night is normally, like, fireworks here in Utah with that being Pioneer Day weekend. So you get to see more fireworks. One in the theater, one outside. Great.
Yep, and we'll probably be getting out of Barbie right at the time when the fireworks will be starting. So, love it. How can you not love it?
It's great. So, be there. Be there for both. Be there for one. Be there for none, but you'll be missing out.
Sure will. So, Friday, July 21st at 7:20 p.m. for Barbie, and then Saturday, July 22nd at 2:30 p.m. for Oppenheimer. We'll let you know where we're sitting. We are ready. It is Sweet Film Meetup time, the fourth annual Sweet Film Meetup.
This is a great meetup. You have awesome options for both. Great weekend. Again, both movies at Geneva Megaplex. So,
yep.
Be there.
Okay. Can't wait.
Fave trailer. Craven looks really good. Cue the sarcasm.
The thing that I loved was like the Red Band trailer starting now. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be freaking nuts. And then it's just like the most peachy Red Band trailer I've ever seen. Ugh.
Yeah, okay, good after luck. This, we got to stop with the Spider-Man standalone villain movies. Don't care.
No, I am actually kind of excited for the Madam Web movie. I'm not going to lie. That one, from what I've heard about it, it sounds freaking insane, and I can't wait.
That sounds cool. Madam Web's really not like a... Is she a villain?
No, she's not. But I mean, like the, you know, kind of spin-off spider characters.
Another multiverse movie with Madam Web, huh?
Yeah, sure is. We need another one.
Why not? Yeah, Craven doesn't look good. But I will say I saw the trailer Jewels with Ben Kingsley and the alien.
And he's that alien. Looked weird.
Never seen it. I saw it came out for Asteroid City, this trailer drop. I never seen that trailer. I was like, this looks pretty quirky. This could be a fun, pleasant surprise, or it could not be good at all. So
I barely recognized Ben Kingsley.
Me neither. I was like, that's Ben Kingsley.
I kept looking at him. I was like, who the heck is that guy? Why do I recognize that guy? Yeah, it was Ben Kingsley under like the crazy. Basically, it was just a wig.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, did you see the poster for that movie with Zach Galifianakis and he shaved his beard?
No.
He just looks like a new guy.
What movie is that?
I don't even remember because I was paying attention to the fact that he didn't have a beard.
Mm. Wild. And the other trailer, lastly for me, is... It's the Barbie trailer. I haven't really sat down and watched the newer one from start to finish. The one that was for Asteroid City.
Oh,
it was for The Flash. Yeah, it came out for The Flash. But I was laughing really hard. It got me really excited.
Me and Becky, you know, we kind of get there. Say what you want. We get there about 10 to 15 minutes late for each showing, because you get 20 minutes of trailers. We watch every single trailer as soon as it comes out. But the one that I did see that I hadn't seen was the new Ethan Coen movie about, it's basically Dumb and Dumber, but two girls, and they find like a briefcase in a car that they pick up to go to Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks interesting. It looks quirky. It looks fun. It's like Drive By Something. I don't remember what it's called, but I realized it was by one of the Coen brothers. So they're just kind of off doing their own thing, which is great.
That does look like a fun watch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there. What was it called again?
I don't remember. If you wanted to look it up, you could. One other big thing that I've been not like looking into, but DC, you know, we're going to talk about it a little bit with The Flash. Why did you announce that everything is going to restart before any of your movies came out this year? No one is going to see your movies, because why would they go see these movies? They don't mean anything. They don't matter.
Yeah, bad marketing scheme there.
Yeah, not to mention you released a movie with like a felon in it and didn't. Well, I mean, what else could they have done? It's not like they could have reshot the whole thing after spending like $200-300 million on this film. Yeah. So The Flash could be an unmitigated disaster for Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Drive Away Dolls is the Ethan Coen movie.
That's it. Yep, Drive Away Dolls. Looks good. Comes out in September. I think both Jules and Drive Away Dolls comes out in September.
Yeah, good little cast, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Margaret Qualley. I don't remember who else is in it.
Seems,
it'll be great.
Seems fun. This could be a nice little surprise.
Can I talk about the favorite thing that I watched this week?
I just was about to ask.
I love it. I have watched this week. I watched my favorite first time watch. It is Stanley Kubrick's 1986 Full Metal Jacket.
Huge.
And I was blown away. The one thing that I've come to notice from all of Kubrick's films is the amount of effort he puts into his production design. Just all of his sets and his locations and all of the detail that go into them. Like 2001: A Space Odyssey is like maybe the best designed and best looking, one of the best looking films I've ever seen. And this one is no exception. It's just, you know, they're filming in the barracks, but like the lighting for everything looks awesome. It looks kind of desolate at the same time, but it's this clean, contrast to everything that they're going through, which is great. And then they go to Vietnam. I don't know if they were actually in Vietnam. I don't know where they filmed, but it's just awesome. I loved it. I didn't even know that they're in Vietnam for some of it. I thought it was mainly just a training, like a boot camp movie. It was kind of wild to see it and be like, oh, sheesh. There's just like, they're actually out in Vietnam in this. Didn't know much about it. So it truly was an exceptional film. It's an A+ suite.
Oh, is it like a war, like scenes movie, or is it more of like a drama, like a war drama?
It's kind of both. Honestly, it's one of the like best edited films I've seen. It's sub 2 hours, which I had always thought it was like 3 hours long, but I think that's Apocalypse Now. I think Apocalypse Now is like 3 hours.
Tell you but what, a sub 2 hour movie.
The last half is pretty like action based, little bit of drama, but it's intense. It's awesome.
Okay. I'm going to add that to the wheelhouse.
Yeah. You have to.
Man, I'm going to be honest. I've started 2001: A Space Odyssey like twice. First time I watched it, I got like 30 minutes into it. I got interrupted. Second time, I restarted it because I was just kind of like in and out. I wasn't as focused. And then I restarted it 20 minutes into it, I fell asleep. So I got to start it again when I am locked in. Yeah.
Sixth time's the charm.
So that's like one of my blind spots. One of the big blind spots right now for me is that. So end of the year, that's the goal. My favorite thing that I watch, I have two. Booksmart, Olivia Wilde.
I'm glad you gave it a second chance.
Yes. Yeah. 2018 was in the theater for like 10 minutes. I don't know. I think I was just like in a really bad mood. Went and watched Long Shot instead with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen, which is not a better movie. Do you know that movie, Long Shot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. But yeah, Booksmart was really cute. Like, I thought it was a lot of fun. Good jokes. A- suite from me. It is definitely like the female version of Superbad, which I think is important to have. Like, I think is like, I love the setting of it too. Like, these two girls did really well in school and they're asking their classmates that kind of like just messed around during school, and they're also having great job opportunities and great college, and they're going to great colleges, and they're like, whoa, what do we do? Like, we didn't have any fun. So their last night is just partying and trying to have fun.
Better than Superbad, in my opinion.
Really? That's a hot take. I disagree, but I think it's definitely good.
I just think it's more inventive. It's quirkier. It's got better direction to it. Better, you know, it's got more flair and more style. So,
yeah.
Love Booksmart. I think that was my favorite first time watch of 2020.
I think it was. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. So, yeah, Booksmart was great. Loved Molly and Amy's friendship. I thought that was really sweet. Mm-hmm. Especially the ending was fantastic. And then lastly, The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, nice.
Last night. So Saturday night. Very cool. Submarine setting. I know that's trending right now. Very sad. Very tragic. Big bummer. But the submarine type of chess game that is being played. There's some misleads of information. It's a classic like Jack Ryan watch. Alec Baldwin is great in it. Sean Connery does a great job too. It's a cool watch. It's very suspenseful with like dialogue, and the effects look great too for it being released in 1990. So if you're like a Jack Ryan fan and you kind of like the espionage type of CIA. This is up your wheelhouse for sure of watches. So I'd probably give it an A- suite as well.
Okay, very timely submarine themed watch with all the submarine stuff that happened this week.
Yeah, big bummer.
Probably a much more exciting time and maybe not so much of a dour time as that thing was.
Yeah. Yeah, really. So Hunt for Red October, very cool. And the director that directed it was the one that did Die Hard too. So had some cool scenes.
Die Hard with a Vengeance?
No, he did Die Hard.
Oh, so, John McTiernan?
Yeah, John McTiernan. Yeah.
Also did Predator.
Yeah. So he was cool. Cool direction style. Really the only action that really actually kind of happens is towards the end. Mm-hmm. But there are some cool tense moments like that takes place in the submarine.
Okay.
So yeah, that's that. Okay, are we on to it?
I'm very excited. A lot of y'all are coming into this expecting one movie to be reviewed better than the other. Boy, are you in for a surprise.
Here we are, Andy Muschietti's The Flash. That has been probably delayed, postponed, kind of had some reshoots, am I right?
10 years.
10 years? This had reshoots?
Not reshoots, but it's just been in development for like 10 years.
Wow. That is The Flash, everybody. Keeks had the opportunity to go see this early screening 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I think it was 3 weeks ago. I think it was the first week of June.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts about that.
So I couldn't make it, which was a big bummer. So I waited 3 whole weeks. My brother, as I mentioned, came from New Jersey. He's a big DC guy. He's like, wait for me to see it. And I told him, I was like, I'm actually going to early screening. He's like, oh, okay, that's cool. Totally cool. Things couldn't work out for me. So went and watched it finally this weekend and had a blast. Had a great time. What a fun surprise.
Yeah, I honestly, like, as soon as I watched that movie, as soon as I came out of the theater of The Flash, I was thinking, this is a lot of fun. I think audiences will really like it if they go see it, which, as things have been showing, not a lot of people have been seeing it. And my first comment about this, before we get into anything, The Flash is about Barry Allen, who is on the eve of his father's prison sentencing for killing his mother, is thinking, okay, I've gone back in time. I've rewound time before. How far back can I go? And he decides, okay, I'm going to go back. I'm going to save my mom. And Batman beforehand is like, hey, you might ruin everything. Maybe don't do that. He does it. He ignores him, goes back in time. And he's able to see the effects of him going back to be able to help save his mom, meet an alternate version of himself, and see what would life be like if my mom survived, and the lessons he learns along the way. Directed by Andy Muschietti, screenplay by Christina Hodson, starring Ezra Miller, Michael Keaton, Sacha Kaye, a few others. And I had a great time. Had a great time with this. I'm gonna bring up my thoughts about why I think this did not go well in a little bit, but
yeah, I think the story is very cool. I think it's unique. I think it kind of has a little Back to the Future-esque feel with having going back in time. What happens if you go in time? What happens if you step on a blade of grass differently? Will that really impact and change the future? And so Barry Allen singing like, what if I just do this? Like, he comes up with these ideas and he's like, that seems rational. Like, I can do that. It won't change anything. And then some things happen when he goes back in time. I think it's just everything that unfolds is great. I think the pacing is excellent. And you said it best when you got out of the movie. You're like, the first 20 minutes, if you like the first 20 minutes, you're in for the movie.
Yep.
If you don't like the first 20 minutes, I think it's going to be a little bit jarring for you. So I think you hit that on the nail on the head, because the first 20 minutes is a really fun time, good action, but it's totally different. I think you said it best too, that it's kind of like the early 2000s of taking risks of those superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
And and what I appreciated about it is, like, the past 10 years we've been getting kind of, you know, that same cookie cutter copy and paste Marvel movies, which is safe. We kind of know it. I think the biggest Marvel movie that we felt like was different was probably Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. That kind of had a different, unique approach. And the Flash is different from Marvel and honestly different from a lot of the other DC movies, I feel like. It was cool to watch a newer, fresher take on superhero movies, which I really liked, and it resonated well with me.
I thought the movie looked pretty great too. Like, a lot of the cinematography was really interesting. Some of the lenses and the camera angles that they used were pretty fresh and exciting. Like, there was definitely, I don't know what they used, but like the close-ups and everything that they used with the lenses that they chose made it like a pretty unique looking movie. I mean, it's not to say this is freaking Blade Runner 2049, but for a modern superhero film, I think that there was a good amount of care put into that from the cinematographer Henry Bram. Now, one thing that a lot of people have been talking about is the VFX. And I remember seeing it. When I saw it, I was like, those are kind of weird, but like, how would you make that look better? When he goes into the Speed Force, he sees moments that are happening in different alternate versions of those moments that he could see in this kind of Speed Force realm. And I guess you could have done that differently. You could have designed that differently and have it be as VFX heavy. Because that Speed Force part in the Justice League in the Snyder Cut is really cool, and I think you could have done it a little differently, but I don't know. I saw it as like, okay, they couldn't make this look much better, so it didn't really bother me, but I can see why it would bother other people.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Speed Force thing wasn't like enough to take me out of the movie. There were definitely some shots of Batman early in that sequence of him riding on this motorcycle. I'm like, that does not look like Ben Affleck at all. So it was just more laughable. It's like, ooh, that doesn't look good. That's pretty bad. But again, it didn't take me out of the movie being like, yeah, I'm totally going to dock this by like a whole letter grade, and I wouldn't recommend this. It's just like, yeah, some of the CG doesn't look great.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, what matters to me is like the story. I thought the performances were great. I know Ezra Miller is in some hot water, not very likable right now, but man, he was pretty likable as Barry Allen in this movie. Hate to say it. Like, I was rooting for Barry Allen to figure everything out. So, and I loved the ending. I thought the ending buttoned everything up pretty well. It kind of pulls the rug from underneath you a little bit. It has like a fun little twist. And then Supergirl and Batman, great screen time. Didn't really take away from The Flash, but it added to it.
Yeah, I think that the two Barrys, you know, having that contrast of Barry that we've seen already, who's a little bit annoying, but he's kind of coming into himself, and then seeing old Barry Allen or newer Barry Allen, like younger Barry Allen, is like, oh my gosh, he's super annoying. And their dynamic throughout the film, I felt, you know, provided a good contrast. Then Michael Keaton was great. Sacha Kaye, for what she's in, is great. The people that were included had a great time. I really liked it. It's probably the most fun I had with a superhero film all year. One of the funnier movies I've seen all year as well. I was laughing a lot in it. Now, I will say some jokes didn't land, but I'd say probably 70-75% of them did.
Oh, it was honestly like a laugh every 3 to 5 minutes for the most part, like on average. Yeah, it was one of the funnier films I've seen this year. Like, honestly, You Hurt My Feelings, this, and Spider-Verse are probably like the three funniest films I've seen.
Yeah. So. No, I did, you know, everyone has kind of been on the same page. It's like, they all really hate it, or they're like, oh, it's awesome, it's a lot of fun. And I attribute that to those first 20 minutes. Now, my theory for why not a lot of people saw it is because I saw this movie 3 weeks early. They have been building way too much hype for this movie since like January, when Tom Cruise said, oh my goodness, it's the best, this is what theaters need right now. And then someone else came out and said, it's the best superhero film I've ever seen, and things like that, where it's certainly not. But they didn't let audiences go in with a normal set of expectations. They didn't go in with a normal DC set of expectations. Plus, they've already come out and said, no, none of this really matters. We're redoing everything. And I think for most people, they're just like, okay, I don't really care about this stuff anyways. It hasn't been very cohesive. So why am I going to care now is, I think, the general term. Plus, people who have already seen it. I didn't go see it again. I got to see it for free 3 weeks early. And why would I go pay money to see it again? I almost was with you, but then me and Becky decided to hang out.
Yeah. I feel like with it not mattering, that also kind of, in my perspective, kind of helped, because it's like, this is a one-time fun watch. It doesn't have any type of like continuation, because it's like a clean slate. So I kind of went in there with zero expectations. Like, this is kind of like the last hoorah for Ezra Miller's Flash and what's happening. And I had a good time kind of with those expectations going in, and with not realizing, you know, there's not going to be anything to follow this, because obviously James Gunn has taken the helm here and things are new. So I think everybody should go see it. I'm going to give it an A-minus sweet. I was telling Kennedy, I think Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, top to bottom, is a much better film. Not much better, but it's better than The Flash.
It is.
Dude, I would rather rewatch The Flash than Volume 3. I think The Flash is more fun and is funnier, honestly. And I like the new approach of style and kind of new things that happen, opposed to Volume 3, which is like, we've kind of seen that DNA before with Volume 2 and Volume 1. And Volume 3 is kind of a sad movie, too. You know, it does have a lot of heart.
It gives you a lot more emotions. This one, yeah. The Flash has some good emotions, though, I will say. Like, there were some very heartfelt moments in the film.
So I'm having a hard time. Maybe, like, maybe I like The Flash a little bit more than Volume 3. Didn't think
I'll be honest. I have The Flash in an A suite. It's my favorite superhero movie of the year. So, which just feels insane that this stupid movie, I really liked it and it resonated with me. And we both recommend it. So if you've been on the fence about seeing The Flash, I think you'll enjoy it. I really had a good time with it. And everyone that I went and saw it with, too, we all had a great time with it.
Yeah. So very fun. I think go see this $5 Tuesday movie. You haven't seen it, really, just and it you don't need to see the other DC movies. It helps to see like Justice League, but it really talks about events that is happening for viewers that haven't seen it. It gives like a quick recap, which is actually nice.
Yeah.
But it doesn't like ham fist it and being like, oh, let's go back and explain this for 5 minutes. It's like, oh, quick, this is how I got my powers. Oh, General Zod's back, shoot. You know. So loved it.
Oh my gosh, what was I thinking? I don't remember what I was going to say. Yeah, so go check out The Flash. Oh, there's some like really cool cameo stuff at the end that I really liked and some people hated. So I don't know. Do we want to say what people thought about it real quick?
Yeah, 3, 2, 1, spoilers.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. 3, 2, 1, sweet. Yeah, so it has a cameo of Nicolas Cage being Superman in another world because he always wanted to be Superman. Mm-hmm. Very fun. I liked it.
Yeah.
Again, this didn't have any gravity because I didn't know it was going to extend. It was like, yeah, give me a fan service. And also for my ending, I had George Clooney as Bruce Wayne when everything goes back to quote unquote normal. Mm-hmm. And it's not Ben Affleck's Bruce Wayne. So I thought that was a ton of fun.
Yeah. At our screening, they didn't give us anything. They just said there are supposed to be 2 end credit scenes, but they're not done yet. We haven't decided which ones, so this is all you get. I was like, okay. But I had heard that the George Clooney one, and then there's one with Aquaman being drunk at a bar with the Flash. And the Flash is explaining how his metabolism works. He can't get drunk.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, cool George Clooney, you know, another Batman. Kind of interesting. Kind of
had
fun.
Had the Superman Reeves. Is that his name? The first Superman?
Yeah, Christopher Reeves. Yeah. Supergirl, which I thought was really weird, honestly. Like, she had one movie, and isn't that nearly as iconic as Christopher Reeves? So I thought that was kind of weird. It was cool to see the alternate version of The Flash in there as well. Like, kind of the older version of The Flash. And
I like the twist of, like, the reverse Flash. Like, that punches him into the younger Barry's timeline. My brother ignored me. He's like, that's him. I was like, oh.
And you kind of see it as they keep going. We didn't even talk about the very end, which I think is fine. Like, we reviewed the movie. That's all we needed to do. So these are just thoughts about the rest of the film. But yeah, they get to the end of it and they keep redoing this fight with General Zod. And they realize, okay, this is one of those moments in the multiverse that we can't change. It's the
you lose
points.
Yeah.
And yeah, so they kept losing. And then, you know, that second time they rewind it and younger Barry has like a shard stuck into his arm. You're like, oh, this is evil Flash.
He keeps going back and back and back. And I was just like, dang, that's kind of cool. So
I'm wondering who's going to be the new Flash in these movies, because Ezra Miller certainly is not going to be involved in these films anymore.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Anyways,
as we see it.
On to Asteroid City.
In a train to San Fernando. I don't know the rest of the song, but that's one of the songs they use in it.
Wes Anderson's newest movie, Asteroid City, written and directed by him, co-written too by, what's his name?
Roman Coppola.
There it is.
I think they did. I think he did part of the story. The movie was written and directed by Wes Anderson, though.
This is kind of a little bit of a framing device for Asteroid City, where you have actors who are acting out a play in Asteroid City, where you have some junior scientists stargazing in this little town, a population, I think, of like 97, 87 people. And there they are and in Asteroid City, and some things unfold. Extraterrestrial visit, some other family mishaps of kind of grieving their mother, things like that. Anything else you'd like to add to the story?
No, I just think that it's a, you know, it's a kind of a movie inside of a movie, like you said, framing device, and it's interesting. It doesn't work all the time, but it certainly was like a very ambitious choice.
Yeah. So it opens up with Bryan Cranston narrating, introducing the cast, the acts, and you realize, oh, this is a play about Asteroid City, which I did not realize. So that was kind of a fun little twist. And I agree, it didn't really work for me all the time. I think at the beginning, I was like, oh, this is cool. And then it kind of panned back into it, and it kind of took me out a little bit because I loved the scenery, the production of Asteroid City. I think Wes Anderson does such a good job with his production, his settings of the site that he uses, and using the mini scales and everything like that. So Asteroid City looks really good. I'll give the positives. For me, looks really good. You have your classic Wes camera pans. I think the actors all buy in and want to work for Wes. Yeah, go on.
I do just want to give a nice little input as the teacher. The camera movement that he incorporates is generally a dolly, which is physically moving the camera forward and backwards. So nice little sweet movie morsel. And then when he moves the camera side to side, that is a truck. So a pan is when the camera is fixed, rotating left to right, whereas a camera movement left to right physically is a truck. So there you go, everyone. You can incorporate a few camera movements when you're talking about camera movement in a film. Keep going.
I love it. Yeah. So your classic Wes camera movements. But yeah, I was really excited for this movie. I am not a Wes Anderson connoisseur. I started watching his movies this year. The only one I had watched previously before starting this year was Grand Budapest Hotel. That was in 2021. And then started all his movies in prep for Asteroid City in January. That was kind of our January watch, was all the Wes Anderson movies. Had a blast. Had a good time. Some are really good, some are good, and some are just like, don't really care. Mm-hmm. And this is one that I don't really care for. Kind of a bummer. I wanted to like it more. I feel like if you're a fan of The French Dispatch, you will like this. Or if you're just a Wes Anderson stan and you love his movies and every one of his movies, you'll love this too. So, and I'm not a Wes Anderson stan. I'm just not. I do like some of his movies, like Grand Budapest is an A+. I'll give you my rankings at the end because I missed last take. So, I just didn't feel the heart nor the humor, because that's what I've noticed with a lot of the Wes Anderson movies that I do like of his. There's a lot of good heart in it, and there's a lot of witty humor that makes me laugh. Yeah. And I feel like this was missing in Asteroid City, and that's why it didn't resonate so much for me. And a bummer that I didn't like it as much of some. I think this could be maybe one of the most polarizing movies of the year. I've been seeing a lot of mixed reviews. All the Wes Anderson stans love it, and all the kind of, you know, so-so fans like me don't really care for it. So that's how I feel.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing for me is as I've like you watched more of his movies this year, is I've come to realize that I recognize the talent, but he's not really my favorite. I would almost compare, I don't want to say this is exactly it, but I would say it's similar like a Kobe Bryant, where it's like you know, when he was playing basketball, it's like, I recognize that you're good, but like, I don't really like you very much. And it's not that Wes Anderson is unlikable. There's just something about his game that it doesn't click with me. And it could be that his style is so his own, which I really like, but I just felt that the story here, there wasn't any conflict for our main characters. The conflict really comes from the play. So as you're watching the play, that conflict that they're feeling kind of comes through to their character on the screen, which I felt was interesting. I would imagine that the more that I think about this film, I'm going to be like, oh, that was really smart and I'm a big dumb idiot and I didn't get it. And that's why I didn't like this movie. But if I feel like that, I can only imagine that like other people feel that way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't really work for me because I don't know. I just couldn't put my finger on it. And I didn't mind like the play and the framing device that it used. I thought that was a ton of fun. But I just didn't. It kept panning back as I was like, I want to stay in Asteroid City, but I get it. There was like a deeper meaning, a deeper theme, but it just didn't really resonate with me. I didn't really relate to it as much as maybe other people did. So, but I did love Woodrow. I thought Woodrow was a great character. I enjoyed his just kind of deadpanness. Mm-hmm. Bryan Cranston was a great narrator. And again, I thought the setting of Asteroid City was great. Don't ever underutilize my guy, Steve Carell, ever again. Give him some more screen time. Give him some more lines.
Yeah. And take Tom Hanks out of this film. I just thought he stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Did not work for me. Everyone else was really great. I thought Jeffrey Wright as like the general was really funny. Scarlett Johansson's character was great. Tilda Swinton was really funny. Everyone else that's in this is really, really exceptional. And I enjoyed it a lot. I just, for me, it comes down to these characters. They're interesting characters. They're fun characters. It's kind of like a slice of life almost film. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like the super genius characters, they don't encounter any conflict as they're going through. They're just established as geniuses and they do genius stuff and that's what they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is some resolve kind of with the grieving of the mother at the end. I thought that was, you know, kind of a cute little moment. But Tom Hanks, I was indifferent about Tom Hanks. I think that was supposed to be Bill Murray that played that part and Tom Hanks stepped in, or it might have been Steve Carell.
Oh, interesting.
One of those two. I need to fact check that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm indifferent about Asteroid City, but I want to go back to Last Take and say that I would love for Wes Anderson to do a synchronized swimming movie. I love that idea.
I agree as well.
That is pretty sweet. Can I give you my pitch real quick?
Yeah, what is it?
Okay, my pitch would be we have pickleball versus tennis players, where pickleball is up and rising as we see today. Okay. And you have your diehard tennis players who are against pickleball. And one of these players of tennis gets invited to play pickleball and he wants to show people up and he realizes that he isn't as good as he wanted to be. So in, you know, behind the scenes with his tennis players, he's working on his pickleball game and he's starting to like pickleball more. And so there's conflict within the groups and then they have like a great big face off at the end and something like that happens. So,
okay. And you can incorporate the kind of Royal Tenenbaums outfits, you know.
Exactly.
He does a great job with the technical aspects, with the costume design, the production design. No doubt that this film would be nominated for all those. I would imagine a best cinematography too.
Sure.
But yeah, I would say that I throw this one at number 7 for me. So I actually really like French Dispatch. I think for me, French Dispatch is better than this, which a lot of people like didn't like French Dispatch.
I didn't care for it.
Oh.
Yeah. French Dispatch. Maybe I'll give it a rewatch one of these days, but that was me.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. But Asteroid City gets a C sour from me. Yeah.
B minus sour for me. So I think it's kind of right in the middle of like a C plus sour. If you're a Wes Anderson fan, you'll go in and you're either going to really like it or you're going to be like, wow, he hasn't done anything good since Royal Tenenbaums, which is maybe how I thought as well. It's not that he hasn't done anything good. It's just like they haven't resonated with me as much as Royal Tenenbaums did.
Yeah. Okay, let's get the sweets and I'll give my rankings. Most of people said this is between a sweet and a sour, maybe more leaning towards sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Sprank Durfs at B plus, Wes's best since Grand Budapest. Awesome on the big screen. Happy Hippie said it was fine. And Tantan Ralph said, I liked it, but I don't know why. Like a fancy meal with far too much on the plate. That's a very well said.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Anything else about Asteroid City that you want to mention?
I just think that like it, you know, if you're into like pretty looking things and interesting, like, you know, the style over substance kind of a thing, I think this will give it to you until we figure out what the movie really means and then be like, okay, maybe it's more of a B sour because,
yeah,
again, like it's hard to watch a movie. Like if a movie has layered meanings, you leave and you get it. You're like, I think it means this, but leaving this, I was like, maybe it means this, but I couldn't really tell you, and left you wanting a little bit more. I think that's how I felt.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm a big story over substance kind of guy, as I'm realizing with myself. I love a good story and resolve. And yeah, that's how I feel. Okay, here's my rankings. Ready?
Okay, I want it.
Number 11, The French Dispatch. Coming in at number 10 is Asteroid City.
Dang.
Number 9, The Life Aquatic of Steve Zissou. Number 8, Rushmore. Number 7, Isle of Dogs. Number 6, Moonrise Kingdom. Number 5, Bottle Rocket. Number 4, The Darjeeling Limited. Number 3, Fantastic Mr. Fox. Number 2, The Royal Tenenbaums. And number 1, Grand Budapest Hotel.
Okay. I think it's interesting that most people have Royal Tenenbaums at like their top 3.
Yeah.
Most people are like, okay, that's, yeah, one of his best ones.
If I had to recommend any Wes Anderson film to anybody, it would be Fantastic Mr. Fox. I think that's easily the most digestible, easily the most like likable for general audiences.
Okay.
If you're a cinephile looking to branch out, I would do Grand Budapest or Royal Tenenbaums. So.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of the next layer of the iceberg. I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, I love it. What do we got next week? What is our next review?
Dun, 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 dun.
Holy crap. Oh my gosh, that's this week! Holy crap, man. Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah. I'm so excited, dude.
Gonna be a blast.
Okay, Indiana Jones, Dial of Destiny. That's our next take. And as always, everyone stay so sweet.
Stay sweet.
Sweet!